I'm Dan Rodericks, and this is Midday. Ecstasy, X, Molly. These are all street names for the drug MDMA, an amphetamine. MDMA arrived on the club scene in the 1980s and has been linked to raves and music festivals. The drug produces feelings of euphoria and reduces anxiety. But conditions at crowded venues often create an especially dangerous atmosphere for its use. Two young men died this summer after attending a dance music festival at Merriweather Post Pavilion. Howard County police suspect drug use at the event was widespread. We'll look at the history of MDMA, why ecstasy has become so popular, and hear from an organization that tries to reduce risk and harm to young people at concerts. That's next on Midday, after the news. Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Midday. Dan Rodericks here on WYPR Baltimore, WYPF Frederick and Hagerstown, WYPO Ocean City, the Eastern Shore of Maryland, and streaming live everywhere online through WYPR.org. Thank you for making Midday again part of your day. Early last month, two young men died after attending an electronic dance music festival at Merriweather Post Pavilion in Columbia. 19 other people were hospitalized, many due to drug-related symptoms. While autopsy reports for the young men have not been released, have not been finalized, Howard County police suspect ecstasy was in use, in widespread use, at the event. Ecstasy is one of the many street names for an amphetamine, MDMA, a synthetic substance that can cause visual hallucinations and feelings of euphoria. There have been other similar deaths throughout the past summer. Two attendees of a music festival in Las Vegas died of drug-related causes. A 19-year-old woman died after attending the Hard Summer Festival in Los Angeles. MDMA played a role in all of their deaths, according to reports. Some venues are taking action. Already in preparation for next year, Ultra Music Festival in Miami announced that attendees must now be at least 18 years old. Concertgoers at New York City's annual Electric Zoo had to watch a public service announcement about the dangers of MDMA to enter the festival. Two people died at that event last summer. According to the National Survey on Drug Use and Health, it was published in 2012, conducted in 2012 and published last year. This is a report commissioned by the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration of our federal government. According to that report, about 16 million people have used ecstasy at some point in their life, and during the 2012 year, 869,000 people used ecstasy for the first time. The number of new ecstasy users is also greater than the number of new users of cocaine, stimulants, and inhalants, according to the national survey. So we're going to talk about this today. This is a midday follow-up to the story we didn't get to early last month, the tragedy at Merriweather Post Pavilion following this electric dance music festival there. With us, we have two guests with us to start off the show. Assistant Special Agent in Charge of the Baltimore District Office of the Drug Enforcement Administration, Gary Tuggle, joining us by phone. Special Agent Tuggle, thank you for being with us.
Hi, Dan. Thank you for having me.
And also with us in the studio joining us today is Matthew Johnson, Associate Professor in Psychiatry at Johns Hopkins School of Medicine, a specialist in this field. We're going to talk with him about MDA, how it affects the brain, and why it causes users to be dazzled by lights and sounds at these concerts, because the environment plays a role in the people's reaction to the drug. Anyway, nice to see you, Professor Johnson. Nice to have you with us, Matthew Johnson.
Thanks, Dan.
But let me start with you, Special Agent Tuggle, just to give us an idea of the scope of this, of the use of ecstasy. You know, we all heard about ecstasy, I think, starting in the 1980s sometime. It was associated with concerts, dancers, raves. And then, I don't know, I kind of lost track of it. I assumed it was still around all those years. But we hear more and more about it these days. Can you talk a little bit about the trend in our region, Agent Tuggle?
Sure, Dan. Traditionally, you're right. You heard more about ecstasy or Molly or X being associated with raves and electric music festivals and electric music parties. There has been sort of a branding metamorphosis, I would call it, in terms of how ecstasy has been rebranded over the years to become more attractive to a younger and younger consumer. We're seeing kids as young as 12, 13 get involved with ecstasy, and it's sort of moved away from the traditional sort of dance music, and it's becoming more common in you know, just regular settings. It's particularly disturbing because as the users get younger, those users continue to use longer over a period of time. So in essence, if we see an eighth grader start to use ecstasy today, the chances of that eighth grader using ecstasy in a 12th grade are pretty, pretty great. So what we've seen is sort of a metamorphosis in terms of branding, and it's moved from ecstasy or X to Molly nowadays, and Molly is associated more commonly with purity. If you think of the name Molly, it's like you know, the little girl sitting in an elementary school classroom, and people tend to associate that with being something good.
So we're seeing you're saying that with some kids anyway, as young as 12 or 13, use of Molly, MDMA, is a, I guess the word threshold, or their first experimentation with drugs.
Yes, yeah, we're seeing the first experimentation, rather than it being with marijuana or other types of drugs, we're seeing that first experimentation be with ecstasy.
Hmm. Matt Johnson, let's talk a little bit here before we go on about what it is exactly. Mm-hmm. You know, I use the term amphetamine, and mm-hmm. I know amphetamine refers to a broad class of drugs.
That's
some
right.
people think of it as speed. Some people mm-hmm. will say, well, the brand names, Adderall is one, for instance. Mm-hmm. But what exactly are we talking about with MDMA, and what does it stand for? I'll let you pronounce it if you like.
Well, these are all structurally related and somewhat related in mechanism drugs. So amphetamine can be used to describe that entire drug class, but methylene dioxymethamphetamine is MDMA.
Thank you. Do that again, would you
methylene
please?
Methylene dioxymethamphetamine.
Okay.
That's MDMA. So structurally, it's a tweak on the sort of classic amphetamine, dextroamphetamine molecule that's in Adderall and other prescription drugs, and is also the basis for another tweak of the molecule, which is methamphetamine. MDMA is even a further tweak. But there's a drastic change in the effects. While some of the general stimulant properties are there that you get with those other drugs like amphetamine and methamphetamine, you still get some of that, but you get more of an emotional reaction. So while the classic amphetamines have more of a dopamine and norepinephrine neurotransmitter type stimulant effect, the really unique effects of MDMA come from a flood of serotonin. And you might know that as the neurotransmitter that's the target of many antidepressant drugs. So low amounts of serotonin are associated with low mood or depression. So it's not surprising that flooding the brain with serotonin, and that's what MDMA does with different types of serotonin receptors. You cause this increase in the amount of serotonin that's hanging out in your neuronal synapses, and this has euphoric effects. It's a complex biology. There's also a release of MDMA causes a release of oxytocin, which is a hormone that's associated with a number of things like bonding, parental bonding, maternal bonding with a child, orgasm that happens with sex.
It would be euphoria.
Yeah.
Relief of anxiety too.
Yeah, yeah. Although it can increase anxiety, but it certainly can decrease anxiety. It increases social awareness, so it increases one's appreciation or concern about social interactions. Can increase bonding. So, you know, you can find folks of on MDMA that, kind of hugging each other and kind of really kind of getting off on just,
Happy.
Being happy, sharing, yeah, like emotional warmth with each other. And those are the positive subjective experiences that people report. And folks at you know, electronic dance scenes will report, you know, really this feeling that the crowd is alive and that they're part of this larger thing. So it really, as a psychoactive drug, has a really positive subjective, typically a subjective profile. Very few people have bad trips, so to speak, with it.
Thank you for this description. It's very different from what we think of when we hear the word amphetamine. Amphetamine, I think of as a stimulant.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. While it does have those effects, and certainly the stimulant properties are very much a part of the potential toxicity. So when people, especially when they're using it in dangerous environments that are crowded and overheated, one of the chief problems is an overall fever, an increase in body temperature.
Hmm.
And that's going to be something in common with the other stimulant drugs, other amphetamines.
Let's go back to Gary Tuttle. Gary Tuttle is an assistant special agent in charge of the Drug Enforcement Administration's Baltimore District. Where does it come from? How do 12 and 13-year-old kids get MDMA? What's the chain of possession there?
Okay, let me first say this, Dan. In addition to the physiological and psychological dangers of MDMA, there's also the danger of the production of it. It's oftentimes produced in Mexico and in China, and oftentimes in very poor quality control, actually little to no quality control in some cases. And a lot of times kids get Molly or MDMA through poly drug trafficking organizations. So there is no sort of singular drug that a particular organization really deals in. Oftentimes they'll sell anything that's marketable, and ecstasy is one of those things. So we often find drug trafficking organizations that will traffic in ecstasy as well as cocaine and heroin at the same time. Again, the problem, one of the problems with ecstasy and the production of it is that there is no quality control, and oftentimes folks think they're getting ecstasy when in fact they're getting something totally different. There are attempts by the manufacturers of this stuff to make the Molly or ecstasy more addictive, and they often adulterate or include additives to meet that end.
I was going to ask about addiction, but first, thank you very much for that explanation. Completely ignorant of how this is done. Now, I'm familiar with methamphetamine, I guess, from following the news and being in the news business myself over the years, and from watching some episodes of Breaking Bad. But I guess this is the same scenario. It's actually manufactured, he said, even in Asia, and transported into this country. So this isn't like someone stealing pharmaceuticals.
No, it's not. Again, yeah. It's produced primarily outside of the country. And in some cases, some manufacturers actually add methamphetamine, right, to increase the addictive properties of the ecstasy.
And yeah, that's correct. There's no nation in the world has a legitimate pharmaceutical approved supply of MDMA. Although there are some trials that are showing some promising initial findings in clinical research for PTSD. But right now there is no this isn't diversion
okay,
of illegal drug.
I want to make sure I understand. This is an illegal drug.
Yeah.
There's no prescription form of MDMA. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
There is no prescription form of MDMA. There are approved supplies for human use in highly restrictive clinical research protocols.
Okay.
And DEA has a schedule as a Schedule 1 drug, which essentially says there is no recognized medical use for it.
Thank you. Agent Tuggle. So down to the street level or the concert level or the playground level, whatever you're talking about here, what does it look like? Could you describe it for us first? I'll go to Agent Tuggle on that.
Sure. It could come in any form. It could come in a pill form. It can come in a capsule form. It can actually come in blotter form. So much like LSD that's placed on a blotter, you can have MDMA placed on a blotter and have it administered that way, just placed under the tongue, or you can inject it.
What have you seen, Matt Johnson, in terms of its form, what it looks like?
Well, I'd agree with most of that. Certainly in pressed tablets, that's very common. This newer name of Molly is associated with people thinking they're getting a pure molecular entity, and that's going to be sold in capsules containing a crystal or a powder in it, rather than something that's a pressed, you know, a pill with binders. You know, pharmaceuticals come in both ways. Sometimes it's a little capsule, sometimes it's a pressed pill. So, you know, but of course, as soon as, you know, a drug dealer realizes they can get more for so-called Molly and claiming that it's pure, you know, you press up the tablets, put it in a capsule, and charge twice as much. So those distinctions are really worthless. The one thing I would take issue with is MDMA and use of blotter paper. That's really...
You're not familiar with that. Something you
blotter
stick under your tongue?
Blotter paper is a very small piece of paper, a couple of square centimeters large, on which it's most commonly associated with LSD. And the reason that you can get LSD and a very few number of other drugs on that is that the drug's so potent that you can, that little tiny piece of paper can hold 100 micrograms or a few hundred micrograms of LSD. There's actually no, the amount of MDMA that would fit on the piece of blotter paper is pharmacologically trivial. One really needs to get up in doses close to 100, you know, 80, 100 milligrams of the drug is going to be a typical starting point for a recreational dose. And there, you can't fit anywhere near that on a piece of blotter paper.
And do these MDMA pills or tablets, capsules, do they present as something that's going to make you happy? I mean, they actually physically look like something that young people would think is friendly.
Hearts and smiley faces.
Is that true?
Exactly.
Hearts and smiley faces.
Yeah, and the officer might be able to speak to more of that than me. But yeah, absolutely. There's a wide variety. Anything anyone could think to put on there, it shows up.
What about that, Agent Tuggle?
Yeah, you know, it's all about branding. And these trafficking organizations want to have the most appeal possible in their products. So they'll put smiley faces. They might put angry faces. They'll put anything on it that one says it's theirs, right? So it's their product, and it's good. So, look, at the end of the day, these folks, these traffickers are out to make a profit, and it's like a business. You know, they want to be able to brand so that they can sell and generate revenue.
And Agent Tuggle, before we let you go here, because we have to take our break, anything you can tell us from the DEA's point of view on the incident this past summer in Columbia at Meriwether Post?
Well, it's my understanding that it's still being investigated. I can't go into the circumstances behind the investigation.
But, it's assumed from the Howard County Police. Has the DEA been involved in this at all?
No, it's a local matter at this
okay.
point, and we're there to assist Howard County in any way possible.
Okay. Agent Gary Tuggle, Special Agent, Assistant Special Agent in charge of the Baltimore Office of the Drug Enforcement Administration. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thanks, Dan.
We're going to take a break here on Midday. When we come back, Matt Johnson stays with us. Matthew Johnson is Associate Professor in Psychiatry at Johns Hopkins School of Medicine. We'll talk some more about MDMA and particularly how it affects concertgoers in the electronic dance music scene, the EDM scene. And then later on, we're going to talk with someone from an organization that doesn't promote drug use, but acknowledges that this stuff goes on at concerts and wants to try to make the kids who go to them, the young people who go to them, safer and less at risk. Our phone number here for Midday, if you have a comment or question about all this, 410-662-8780. The email address, you can address a question or comment that way, midday@wypr.org. And welcome back to Midday. Sherry Llewellyn at the Office of Public Affairs for the Howard County Police Department responded to our request for information, follow-up information about the incident this summer, tragic incident this summer at Meriwether Post Pavilion. In that case where two young men died, she said, we have not yet received the final autopsy report. Our detectives are working on identifying where the drugs at the event came from. And that's all they have to say about it so far. This is Midday. Dan Rodericks here. Joining me in the studio from Johns Hopkins School of Medicine is Matthew Johnson, who's an associate professor in psychiatry. And I guess I have really taken a lot of your scholarship and research devoted to this particular field because it's something that's been emerging more and more, becoming more prevalent in the last few years, the use of MDMA.
Yeah, I pay a lot of attention to MDMA. I don't do laboratory research directly with it, but I do lab research with two very closely related drugs, one methamphetamine on the stimulant side, and on the psychedelic side, psilocybin, which is the active agent in magic mushrooms. So But certainly keep my eye closely on the work that goes on with MDMA and understanding its toxicity and its potential clinical applications.
I referred to EDM, electronic dance music. How did these two become associated? What's the history there?
Yeah, well, dating back to the 80s, one of the early sort of social scenes where the drug popped up in was in sort of the dance club scene. So it started back in the early mid 80s in Texas, and but really a few years later in Europe, the drug became associated with, it started to be used at these very large raves, which was a new thing at the time, and that the whole rave culture is something that once was kind of an underground phenomenon. You know, folks would kind of, you know, find a warehouse in the middle of nowhere, either, you know, they rent it or just, you know, kind of take it over,
right.
Squatters' rights, and have these like massive parties based on electronic music, that whole culture, regardless of the drug use, has really kind of been co-opted by more of, you know, the vested interests. You know, now one
it's
will
become
see that
more mainstream.
Yeah,
right? Would you say in 20 years it's become more mainstream?
Yeah, the venues that are hosting that music,
yeah,
are selling legal drugs like alcohol.
Right.
Right. Where one could, you know, drink alcohol and you know, bring their cigarettes and smoke. So, you know, sort of the established forces have kind of co-opted that.
Mm-hmm.
But you still, there has been this association between MDMA and the electronic dance movement genre. But I would be cautious about being you know, critical of the genre generally. I mean, we look at the history of illicit drugs in this country. There is often, it's almost the rule that there is association with marginalized groups, often marginalized racial groups, be it African Americans, Mexican immigrants, you know, associated with cannabis back in the 1920s. You know, jazz music was highly associated. Like, you know, one of the first things that could have occurred to the typical American in the 30s, jazz music, all that stuff that people get, you know, hopped up on marijuana.
Gin and sin. And
yeah.
Gin and sin, right? Yeah.
So, you know, now it's a treasured, you know, American art form it's recognized as. So I'd really want to be cautious about, you know,
What I was getting at is, no, I understand what you're saying, mm-hmm. But what I was getting at is there's something about the environment that works well with the drug, with the use of ecstasy.
Works well and actually makes it particularly dangerous. So subjectively, that sense of connection with other people, the social enhancing, the subjective effects, that certainly plugs in well. But it's really quite striking how the environment can also increase the danger. So just putting rodents in a crowded laboratory environment will decrease the amount of the drug that it takes to cause a lethal effect by 3 to 4-fold. So you need 3 to 4 times less of the drug to cause a lethal reaction. Just think about, you know, how that translates to, you know, some of these large scenes where there's thousands of people packed in.
This is really weird.
Temperature has an effect,
sorry,
too.
I appreciate you explaining this, but I want to dig a little deeper here. I'm trying to understand what's going on in the brain, then.
Yeah, that's still largely a mystery in terms of the ultimate mechanisms that are driving that type of effect. But
it's because of the overstimulation?
Yeah, so, you know, the environment has strong effects on your physiology, regardless of drugs. When you step into a crowded room, you're feeling different. And there's a biology to that. There are different things going on all around, and I think we haven't even scratched the surface in terms of really understanding that. So there are these interactions with the environment that sometimes not just have, you know, little nudging effects on the drug effect, but sometimes have whopping effects. It's also, there is concern about long-term neuronal damage that can happen with either excessive amounts of MDMA or using the drug frequently. It's known that that temperature, increasing the temperature
of the body temperature,
yeah, increases those damaging effects. There's a lot of controversy about how clinically meaningful those results are in terms of, much of this is based on animal work, and there's controversy about what dose translates to a typical human dose. It's also hard to study these things. Many of the human studies are cross-sectional, so, you know, pre-existing differences you'll end up in situations where ecstasy users, you know, look impaired on many dimensions. Some of that might be caused by the drug, some of it may not be.
Well, given what you said, Matt Johnson, I would find interesting the results of an autopsy of someone suspected of dying at a concert or one of these music festivals, having taken ecstasy. What I mean, what would be listed as the cause of death? I mean, maybe you know of cases where a cause was listed.
Well, certainly, you know, the drug itself, MDMA, can be a cause. But, you know, in the real world, you know, regardless of what's ultimately put on paper, there's typically many contributory causes. So perhaps, and we don't know, these aren't controlled experiments, but perhaps for that individual, had they taken that same exact dose of MDMA at home in their air-conditioned room by themselves, perhaps they would have lived. You know, we know that the animal research shows us that there are these modulating effects of these environmental conditions, but you can't say for sure how much, you know, the drug versus the environment were a contribution. In most cases, clearly, if a psychoactive drug hadn't been taken, the person wouldn't have died. So it seems to be a big part of it. But something that will be really interesting when the toxicology is available from these deaths is whether it was even MDMA, because one of the very interesting things is many of these, there's really a proliferation that's been unseen in the history of drug use. There's a proliferation of novel psychoactive drugs.
What does that mean? Novel? You mean different combinations of things? Bath salts or all that stuff?
Not necessarily new combinations, but different chemicals, some of which have been created by drug abuse scientists or neuroscientists trying to understand the brain. But a lot of these new so-called the synthetic cannabinoids or the fake marijuana, there are these novel compounds besides THC that hit the same receptor in the brain. So many of the so-called bath salt compounds, which are, scientifically speaking, substituted cathinone or cathinone-derived compounds, those are stimulant-like compounds. With the good overlap with MDMA-like effects, they can have these sort of empathogenic or the properties of increasing appreciation for social interaction, as well as the stimulant properties, so, and they're very cheap.
Excuse me. When you're using the word "good," there, you're thinking about the possible future use of them as a pharmaceutical.
I think by good, I was just referring to the subjective effects, what would drive someone to use the drug.
The appeal of them, you mean.
But in fact, I think that actually is a very good point. Some of these, like the so-called bath salt compounds, we know that structurally they are very much related to the drugs that we give kids to treat ADHD. Any one of them could actually hold future potential as the next ADHD drug that has a lower risk of side effects, etc. We don't know it. One of the problems at being at the interface between the clinical benefits of drugs and the abuse of drugs is that oftentimes something completely new shows up, and the first thing we do is throw it into the completely most restrictive category of Schedule One, which completely de-incentivizes any pharmaceutical company for pursuing clinical applications of the drug. Many times these there's no patent or the patent has expired. So it's quite interesting.
Do you know what the pitch is to young people to try to experiment with Molly? I mean, what is verbally stated about it? What's the sales pitch?
Many people will say it's an experience unlike one they've ever had. Many of the same things that people say about the classic psychedelics like LSD and psilocybin, they'll say about MDMA, that people will say, well, it changed me forever. I had a heart-opening experience. And some of these are, in fact, getting at the core of what may be therapeutically useful in a much more controlled and safe environment when the drug is applied in that ongoing research.
You mean if a person has a certain personality, say, they're not outgoing enough, they don't crave going to dances, for instance, or being in crowds.
Yeah.
This might make them feel more relaxed about that
and
enjoy that experience more. That'd be the sales pitch?
Yeah, so breaking down social barriers. And people will also report insights about themselves, getting in touch with repressed feelings or dealing with emotional issues they hadn't dealt with. But people will just say you have a heck of a good time, too. The music becomes incredible, and people like to dance.
Here's a quote that appeared in the Baltimore Sun last month in a follow-up story following the deaths of those two young men and the hospitalization of 19 others. at the Mad Decent Block Party that was held at Merriweather Post Pavilion. A young man, 21 years old, who attended this festival, he said, most of the people, I don't think they would go if they didn't have drugs, to be honest, because I don't think they would enjoy the music as much as everyone else.
Well, certainly that would be true for some. I doubt whether it's most individuals. That's an empirical question. I think, like with any art form that becomes associated with a particular type of drug use, there are plenty of people that enjoy that music without the drug.
Right. But for certain personalities, like we were saying, the appeal would be that this would make them feel more comfortable and enjoy the experience, being in the crowd with lots of flashing lights.
Yeah. That's sort of presented as a package.
Matt Johnson is with us. Matthew Johnson is associate professor in the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences at the Johns Hopkins School of Medicine. We're talking a follow-up manner today about the deaths that occurred at Merriweather last month and some others that have occurred around the country. And as I stated earlier in the show, an increasing use of MDMA and Molly, these terms show up in news reports over the last 24 hours about an NFL player, well-known to lots of Ravens fans. Here, Wes Welker, now with the Denver Broncos, who has been associated with first testing positive for amphetamine, according to published reports, and then another report suggesting that Molly, some form of Molly or MDMA, might have been in his body. Wes Welker, who has been suspended for 4 games, vehemently denies that he ever took any of these substances and says there's something flawed with the drug testing system. This is Midday on WYPR. Our phone number, 410-662-8780. Let's take a quick call here, Matt Johnson. This is Mac giving us a ring from Frederick to talk about drugs and the concert scene. Hi, Mac.
Hey, Mr. Roderick. How are you doing?
Good. Thanks for calling.
I just want to call. I'm actually a family friend. I'm a young guy. I've been to a lot of festivals, not a lot of festivals, but I've been to a lot of shows and concerts, and I'm not really into the whole drug scene, but I have a lot of friends that are. And I've noticed that when you go into a concert, a lot of times they pat you down and they try and find drugs, and they don't seem to notice. And then as you're in the bathrooms, you'll see guys doing a bunch of them. And then as you're leaving concerts, you'll see a whole bunch of bags of Molly. And the other thing I'll point out is that when I've asked my friends what the different drugs do, and they've mentioned Molly, like they said, it just makes you want to dance and wants to make you have fun and makes you feel happy. So you do tend to loosen up, and I've seen my friends do, like, some of them, and they seem to have a good time. And, I haven't seen a huge negative effect because I haven't seen any overdoses, but I obviously can tell that it's not good to do drugs like that for your body.
Well, thank you very much for those observations, Mac. What about overdoses? I meant to ask Agent Tuggle that question here. We're seeing increases in overdoses.
Well, the
if you know, I don't know. Yeah, put you on the spot here.
I'd say it's been relatively stable for the last few decades, with some ups and downs. In the big scheme of things, though, I think it's important to remember the scope that we're talking about. It's something on the order of 1 out of 100,000 people that use what's reported to be MDMA, ecstasy, will have a lethal reaction. The majority of the time, those are in combination with other drugs. So we're talking about something that, you know, is rare. Of course, it's tragic and the end of the world for that particular individual and their family, but
Is it rare among 18 to 25-year-olds, though? I mean, if you break it down and look at that demographic group, especially white 18 to 25-year-old Americans, what would you say?
It comes nowhere close to prescription drug deaths, the rates of those, or the lethal reactions to drugs like heroin or to alcohol.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for that perspective. I mean, there are people, obviously, who have kids who are teenagers and are concerned about this, and we hear about these drug deaths. I appreciate that perspective, but you hear about the deaths associated with a concert, and you wonder what else is going on out there. You know, and the idea here was to learn more about this, and you certainly are helping us with that, Matt Johnson. So we're going to take a break here, and Matt will be with us. If you have another question for him, please give us a ring. Again, our phone number is 410-662-8780. That's the number for Midday. When we come back, we'll be speaking with Elise Matthews also. She's with the D.C. chapter of Dance Safe. Dance Safe, attends music festivals to promote safe drug use. They argue that some concert goers are always going to use drugs regardless of whether the venues search or ban items, and the best way to prevent deaths is to promote safe use, such as offering to test drugs before people take them. We'll hear about that when we get back. A short break now. And this is the Midday Show. Dan Rodericks here. Matt Johnson from Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. In a moment, we'll be joined by Elise Matthews from the D.C. chapter of Dance Safe. We'll hear about that nonprofit in just a moment. I'll slip in a phone call here or two. Loretta in Hunt Valley, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
I'm listening, and basically I've heard everything good about this drug and nothing bad, except you've mentioned the kids who have died from an overdose or something there. But the long-term effects of the drug, what does it do? I have a grandson that died from suicide, rumored to have taken that in the past, but not at the time. There was nothing in his bloodstream that suggested any drugs when he did die. I'm wondering what it does to people and long-term effects, and is it actually found in the blood? Long after or what?
Okay.
Whatever you have about the effects of it.
All right, Loretta, thank you. And also addictive qualities. I meant to ask Matt Johnson about that, so go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. And as I alluded to before, negative effects are going to be, there are definitely negative effects, and they are largely they're strongly modulated by the environment where it's taken. There can be dangerous effects when it's taken in an ideal environment. That's true for any drug, really. I mean,
especially one that you don't know its source, you don't know where it came from.
Yeah, right? And much of what we're talking about with ecstasy isn't MDMA, because it can be any number of drugs that are combined with or there instead of. Now, with pure MDMA, as I said earlier, there's some strong debate in interpreting some of the animal science and some of the human cross-sectional studies. But there is concern about this neuronal damage that I mentioned that could be associated with some things like depressed mood and with sleep apnea. The concern is that in heavy users, they may have essentially depleted their serotonin reserves. And we don't know a whole lot about the conditions in real human beings under which you're likely to see that. It doesn't look likely that you're going to see any of that in a few applications in a safe environment.
What about the addictive qualities?
I would say it's moderate. Clearly, there's a lot of ways to look at addiction at a very basic level. You can look at whether animals will self-administer the drug under really rigorous models. In MDMA, it's no cocaine. As most users would tell you, it's nowhere near that end of the spectrum, cocaine and heroin. But it's also clearly, it can support higher rates of administration than, say, the classic psychedelics like LSD. People certainly can use the drug too much and have trouble controlling their own use. That isn't likely to be an issue as it is with cocaine. So it's kind of in the middle of the road in terms of addiction potential.
Thank you, Matt. Elise Matthews is joining us now from the D.C. chapter of Dance Safe. Thanks for being with us, Elise.
Thank you.
Explain to us what Dance Safe is. Some people think, well, what do they mean? Does Elise go to concerts and tell kids it's okay to use drugs?
No, not at all.
You don't promote the use of the
drugs.
We
do not promote drug use. We simply acknowledge that it happens.
Right.
So what we're a nonprofit harm reduction organization, and we basically go around to these raves, festivals, any kind of music event, really, and we are educating people about not only recreational drugs, although that's a big part of it. We talk about safer sex, how to stay hydrated, how to get home safely, all kinds of issues that affect these events. But we are most well known for addressing the issue of recreational drug use because we're the only organization in the country that does so in such a pragmatic way.
You find it unrealistic to say, just say no.
That's correct. Actually, we like to say just say no with a K-N-O-W. So we feel like just say no messages work very well for young children.
Well, how do you know? How do you know K-N-O-W? How do you know what you're getting?
Well, you don't. And that's, I mean, that's a big problem because obviously it is an illicit market. And that's why one of the things that we actually do is drug checking. We do this whenever possible. We sell testing kits and we also perform on-site drug checking at events. And that's so that people can, you know, everybody purchases Molly, whatever that means, with the intent of getting MDMA. Nine times out of ten, it's not MDMA, or, you know, it's almost always adulterated with other things so that it can be sold and made more money off of it.
Elise, I'm a little surprised that the managers, the organizers, the sponsors of a concert would even want you on the premise, because allowing you on the premise seems to say that they're acknowledging, too, that there are drugs on the premise.
Exactly. And that's the largest obstacle that we face, actually, is having promoters and venue owners on board with what they're doing, because there's very real laws that hold them responsible if something happens. And, you know, anything they do to construe that they knew that drug use was occurring at their event, something bad happens, they could be liable for it. So oftentimes, you know, they don't want to have harm reduction organizations like Dance Safe on site, because they say, well, it's promoting drug use. It's saying that we know that there's drug use going on. But what we're doing is addressing an issue that already occurs, and we are trying to help prevent deaths and hospitalizations that are, in the end, very preventable.
What do you tell your friends? And if you had children, I don't know if you have children, but if you had children, what would you tell them about this?
About Dance Safe or MDMA?
No, about MDMA, about Molly, about the opportunity to experiment with ecstasy.
Well, I would say that all drug use has inherent risks. Drug use, especially illicit drug use, is a very risky activity. There's a reason people engage in that activity in spite of those risks, and that's because there are also, you know, for whatever reason, people feel they obtain benefits from it, and for a lot of people, those benefits outweigh the risks. So I would say if you are thinking about using a drug, doing something like that that's a risky activity, really, before you go into it, perform a risk-benefit assessment. Say, you know, what are the risks of this, and how do they contrast with the potential benefits that I could obtain from it? Do I really want to do this? Do I understand the risks fully? And, of course, like with MDMA, one of the major risks is overheating. And
dehydration?
And
is
dehydration,
that another issue?
Absolutely.
Yeah, because I heard you mention that.
Mm-hmm. And when I talk about preventable deaths, that's what I mean. Most of the time, it's because, you know, these young people are in these really crowded, hot environments with little to no access to water. They've got, you know, water being sold at $5 a bottle, and sometimes it's like there's no way to keep themselves hydrated while they're dancing, except somebody's got a cranberry and vodka beside them, so they're sipping on that, which is dehydrating them even more. And these are the very real conditions in which people are using MDMA.
To me, I was going to say that the biggest risk would be, what am I putting into my body?
Right,
you know, where does this come from? Mm-hmm. It was made in China. It was made in Mexico. Mm-hmm. What's in it? Mm-hmm. What kind of combination of things is in there? That's what would scare me off, I think.
Yeah, so I agree. You know, certainly the identity of the compound is very important, and Dance Safe, I believe, when you can, you know, will provide those testing services. I do want to make the note, though, in relation to the drinking, that some people die from drinking too much as an overreaction to these types of caution.
Drinking too much water?
Drinking too much water. So they end up with a condition called a hyponatremia, which is essentially low salt. One drinks so much water. One of the effects of MDMA is for the kidneys to keep a little more water, shuttle it instead of urinating it out, put it into the blood system, and you're sweating out all your salt. So you keep, you know, someone, and it's a stronger effect for women. So, you know, women especially drinking a couple of gallons of water sometimes have died.
Right.
As a result of
There's
drinking too much water.
And that's, we also educate people about that, the salt balance, and we hand out Gatorades
this question. I want to hear from you on this, at least. Based on what Matthew says about this and what young people hear about these drugs, it sounds pretty good. It sounds maybe too good. Like, as the caller was saying before, called in with actually a complaint that we make it sound too good. We're believing, we're not advocating use of this here today. But it does have a lot of, it sounds like it has a lot of appeal and low risk of addiction. Your friends use it. You're in a crowd. There's a lot of peer pressure, of course, but you see others use it, and it kind of looks like it's safe. I mean,
yeah,
it's hard to argue against it.
When you think about the high rate at which it's used, and it is, what was the statistic? It was 850,000 new users every year.
869,000,
right,
according
so
to the last
survey.
So
it's being used at a very high rate, and that rate is rising. And I would say, I would say that it's pretty amazing that we only have a handful of deaths every year, you know, based on something that's supposed to be an incredibly dangerous drug. I would say that MDMA, actually, compared to many drugs, many illicit drugs that people think of that we use for recreation, I think it's a relatively low-risk drug. And that doesn't mean that it doesn't have risks. It has plenty of risks, even outside of these hot, crowded environments. But a lot of these deaths are very preventable, and that's why we're there trying to help keep people safe, trying to educate people about that fact. Because as the young man that called in mentioned, he said, you know, they patch you down at the door, they search you, they do everything they can, and people are still using drugs in the bathroom. People are still using drugs when they leave. People are using drugs before they come to the event. You're not going to stop the drug use, and that's the point. So we're trying to meet people where they're at rather than where we think they should be, and we think that's a more pragmatic way to approach the situation.
Let's take another call. Irvin in Baltimore. Irvin, thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you. Yeah, I'm calling because I kind of grew up in Detroit during the birth of the rave scene and electronic dance music, and there are a couple side effects, a couple problems with drugs that I'm not hearing being addressed. One is the fact that the use of particularly ecstasy and Molly leaves a lot of girls very, very open to date rape and sexual assaults. Remember, you've got venues where there could be literally 13-year-old girls with dancing with 40, 50, 60-year-old men. And that used to happen a lot. That was a big, big problem, particularly back then, and I really don't think it's gone down any. The second is we used to have something called Suicide Tuesday, which was the several days after usually a rave party happened on a Saturday night. And a couple days later, you would crash from these drugs. And the crash was so bad that it increased the risk of suicide. There was massive, massive depression. And you would literally have friends who were on watch to watch out for the side effects of these drugs.
Irvin, we're short of time. I want to let Elise respond to both those things you said you raised.
Sure. I've heard of Suicide Tuesday, and that can really be explained by the fact that MDMA does release a lot of serotonin in your brain. You know, as high and happy as you feel then, it all has to come back to normal levels eventually. So, you know, that's what people refer to when they refer to the post-MDMA depression. It's your brain returning back to normal from that serotonin rush. And that, I mean, that is an issue, and that is a risk of MDMA.
And
so.
Is ecstasy has been associated with date rape?
I don't know.
I'm not going to make the declaration. Yeah. I'm asking, I guess.
I mean, I've never been super aware of that correlation. That doesn't mean that it doesn't exist. I'm sure, you know, it does lead to a feeling of openness, and it reduces inhibition and fear. Mm-hmm. So I could see that somebody might be more trusting,
Matt,
than they normally would be.
And I'm sure there's cases, there's going to be anecdotes of anything happening. So certainly people have been assaulted while on MDMA. But the pharmacological effects of that drug do not lend themselves to the date rape situations. Those drugs, well, first and foremost, is alcohol, and then you get the benzodiazepine drugs like Xanax and diazepam, Klonopin. All those affect GABA, neurotransmitter. They impair your memory. Other drugs like GHB, MDMA, you don't want, you know, someone wouldn't want to stimulate and increase the wakefulness of someone they're going to assault like that.
Matt Johnson, I thank you for being here today. I've been most informative and appreciate having you with us. Matt Johnson is Associate Professor in the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences at the Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, nice to have you
with
us, Matt. And Elise Matthews, it's dancesafe.org, right?
That's correct.
If folks want more information about Elise Matthews' organization, public health nonprofit called DanceSafe, find it at dancesafe.org. More information on the Dan Roderick's Facebook page. Elise, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And thank you, everybody, for tuning in. That's the first hour of Midday. Another hour of our show is coming up after lunch, provided today by Breathe Bookstore Cafe. Breathe Bookstore Cafe serves vegetarian, vegan, and gluten-free savory sweets, coffee, tea, juices, and more. It's open 7 days a week, and you can find it on the Avenue, that's 36th Street, in Hamden. See you for the second hour of the show.